John Bachman, who pierces people's face. The K is for the kill, L is for the lover, and the M is for the mutiny, and I wish it didn't happen.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my drum?
Now the N is for not, oh no, my phone's just sinking. The B is for the peg leg that keeps me standing up. A Q is for quantum leap, R is for the rum, and the S is for the scurvy, which I wish I didn't get.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg.
That's underneath my boat. And B is for Mukitas, who plays a sour note. W is Tiasis, X marks a spot. Why? Cause I'm a pirate.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my grog?
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Tuesday, October 9th, 2012. Settlers cut off olive trees owned by West Bank farmers, and Palestinian boy attacked and arrested by Israeli troops in Jerusalem last week was released today. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. Local sources reported that a group of armed extremist settlers of the Aliyeh illegal settlement cut dozens of olive trees that belongs to residents of Karyut village, south of the northern West Bank city of Nablus. The settlers cut at least 120 olive trees that belongs to 12 residents of Karyut village. Eyewitnesses reported that settlers used chainsaw to cut the trees. The orchards that have been attacked are located near a number of illegal Israeli settlements. To date, Tuesday, October 9th, marks the beginning of the olive harvest season in Palestine, especially in orchards that became totally isolated behind the annexation wall. Settler attacks against Palestinian villagers and orchards usually escalate during the olive harvest season. Earlier in the week on Saturday, Palestinian medical sources in Hebron in the southern part of the West Bank reported that dozens of Palestinian villagers picking their olive trees west of Hebron were treated for the effects of tear gas inhalation after being attacked by Israeli soldiers. Israeli soldiers kidnapped on Tuesday at dawn the wife of detainee Muhammad Atiyah Abu Warda after breaking into their home in Al-Fuwar refugee camp south of Hebron in the southern part of the West Bank. Amjad Abu Warda was sentenced by Israeli court to 47 life terms as Israel claims that he is responsible for similar attacks carried out by Al-Qassam Brigades, the armed wing of the Hamas movement. In other news, last Friday, several Israeli policemen in full riot gear violently attacked and punched a Palestinian boy from Jerusalem and kidnapped him. The child was released today and was placed under house arrest. A video captured by a Palestinian cameraman shows several Israeli policemen forcing the child, Hassan Al-Fifi, onto the ground, face down, while one policeman was punching him to the head and another policeman holding the child's hands behind his back to cuff him. Another officer then walked to the cameraman and forced him to stop filming. And that's all for today from the IMEMC News. This was the Tuesday, October 9th news roundup from the occupied Palestinian territories. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. Today's report has been brought to you by Hussam Kassis and me, Ghassan Bannoura.
Afghanistan, 7th of October. Two U.S. Special Forces operators were killed by small arms fire somewhere in eastern Afghanistan. Afghanistan, 9th of October. The bodies of six members of the Aman Lashkar anti-Taliban peace militia were found in Tira Valley. Pakistan, 8th of October. Unknown fighters blew up a NATO truck carrying cargo to Afghanistan on Jamrud bypass, but no casualties or injuries were reported. Officials said that militants had planted an explosive device along Jamrud bypass road to target the NATO convoy, adding that two trucks were targeted in the area in just an hour. Pakistan, 7th and 8th of October. Over 1,000 protesters, including members of U.S.-based Code Pink, attempted to enter the tribal regions as part of their protests against murderous U.S. drone strikes. Iraq, 7th of October. 11 people were executed in yet another mass execution by the Iraqi prison system, the one the U.S. helps take state power. One was an Algerian who was not even permitted to make a final statement. He was silenced by the noose instead. Iraq, 9th of October. The Iraqi Transport Ministry is denying media reports that U.S. forces have been present at Baghdad International Airport inspecting Iranian planes bound for Syria and Assad's forces for weapons. It is known that U.S. Special Forces are back in Iraq on some kind of anti-terrorism mission. Could this be that unspecified mission? Iraq, 9th of October. Two bombs detonated in Kirkuk, and a police colonel was hit by a bomb in West Mosul. A judge was also killed in Mosul. Clearly, U.S. intervention did not stabilize Iraq, even with 8 years of occupation. The 7th of October was the 11th anniversary of the start of the war in Afghanistan on that side of the planet. On that day, the Taliban released this statement, which the United States has yet to respond to. Quote, with the help of Allah, the valiant Afghans under the jihadi leadership of Islamic Emirate defeated the military might and numerous strategies of America and NATO alliance. And now, after 11 years of unceasing terror, tyranny, crimes, and savagery, they are fleeing Afghanistan with such humiliation and disgrace that they are struggling to provide an explanation. Can anyone say that this is false, given that the U.S. has been mostly driven from Iraq and is now drawing down troops from Afghanistan? Mr. Barack Obama, what have you got to say about this? Now is the time to throw in the towel, bring the rest of the troops home today. Over the weekend of October 6th to the 7th, the anniversary of the start of the war in Afghanistan, about 35 members of Code Pink participated in a demonstration of thousands of people in Pakistan against the deadly U.S. drone strikes. Here's what Medea Benjamin and other members of Code Pink said on CNN from Pakistan.
We've been to an area where they have not seen Americans for 10 years, and all they know of America are planes that fly over their heads, sometimes 24 hours a day, terrorizing them, especially the children who go to sleep at night, not knowing if they will wake up alive the next day. And so to have a group of Americans come there with open arms to say that we want to live in peace with you, that's a wonderful thing for our national security.
Activists say the drone strikes that target militants in the region are illegal assassinations in sovereign countries where the U.S. is not at war. They also say drones kill too many civilians and fuel hatred.
We are creating our own enemies, obviously, and this is one of the best tools for recruitment for the bad guys. Okay. Isn't that obvious? They are immoral, they are illegal, and against a national rule of law and the U.S. rule of law.
On Sunday, the second day of the protests, a motorcade of over 100 vehicles set out from the town of Tank for the autonomous tribal area, but the Pakistani government blocked the de facto border with shipping containers and security forces and wouldn't let anyone pass. Probably this is because the autonomous tribal areas or places the Pakistani government doesn't go, the U.S. military doesn't go, and only American drones go. Maybe they were afraid members of Code Pink would be killed in a U.S. drone strike? Meanwhile, Democracy Now, as part of their coverage, carried the words in translation. Meanwhile, Democracy Now! Carried the words of Pakistani political leader and protest organizer Imran Khan on the drone strikes.
These drone attacks are a violation of international law. These drone attacks are a violation of the human rights of the Pakistani people. Do we all condemn them? We want to send a message to America. The more drone attacks you carry out, the more the people will grow to hate you and raise their arms against you. Our tribal people will not be scared off with drone attacks.
According to Democracy Now!, there were also 10 people arrested in a solidarity protest outside a U.S. military base in New York. This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to wsqtradio@hushmail.com. Repeat, wsqtradio@hushmail.com. On the 6th of October, on the 11th anniversary of the start of the U.S. war in Afghanistan, American soldier Micah Turner announced publicly that he was defecting from the U.S. military because of the war in Afghanistan. Sometime before his public appearance, he gave this interview to WSQT Radio.
So you say you went AWOL from the U.S. military because of the wars?
That's right. I was in Afghanistan when Bin Laden was killed, and a lot of really good men died that year. I just feel like betrayed by our government, that all the veterans have been betrayed by their government. Even if we were justified in the beginning, there's no reason for us to be at war now.
On the 6th of October, when Micah Turner publicly revealed himself on Freedom Plaza, he spoke to Occupy DC and a number of reporters.
My name is Micah Turner, Sergeant, E5, U.S. Army. What was that?
Where are you assigned?
I'm assigned to 9th MIS, Military Information Support Operations Battalion, Airborne Bravo Company, of 5 sects of 8th MIS, Military Information Support Operations Group, Task Force Battalion.
Is there anything that you would want to say to those who are overseas as well, on active duty, who might be thinking about taking a step themselves?
I'd say, first off, I feel your pain. While you're there, keep your head down, keep your eyes sharp, protect the brothers on your left and right, even if that means doing what you have to do. And I'm sorry to say, but that's just the simple reality. When you get home, speak up. You're not supposed to have a voice, but you have more of a voice because you're not supposed to. They will arrest us.
The military does take you into the custody. How could the viewers support you financially and solidarity, show a lot of support? Because legal,
right,
just legal fees, so on and so forth.
If they want to support me while I was in jail, I'd say the best place to go to that is my new Facebook page. Do you remember that?
Probably the best thing is a Twitter account.
Twitter.
We'll make sure to keep that going. It's Unoccupier.
Unoccupier.
Yeah. UNOCCIPIER.
Unoccupier. Unoccupier, just like it's pronounced.
Right, and that's in reference to the United States occupation of other countries. Like, I think it's perfectly fine for us to try and occupy the government just so that our voices can be heard. Because our voices need to be heard. We have something important to say. There's too much corruption. Any corruption is too much corruption. You know what? As long as politicians takes millions of dollars to be elected, as long as it takes millions of dollars to be a politician, politicians can only represent the interests of millionaires and not the interests of the people. The system is broken, and we're the only ones that can fix it. It's our duty to dissent.
It's our duty to dissent.
How much...
an occupier.
If only 10% of the people vote...
Can't just put it up.
The money that's involved in elections is overwhelming if it's only 10%. How much of a responsibility is it for the other 90% to get out there and register, because it dilutes the money?
Well,
so
what I was...
Do the people bear any responsibility for not actually being active and voting? Wouldn't that dilute the amount of money coming in, and you'd have to spend it all over the country like crazy if every single person voted?
Right now there's a lot of talks about not voting because no one is worthy of their vote. I totally understand and agree with that. But not voting isn't going to make a point. If anything, please go to the voting booths on that day, make a box that says no one. Cross it out and take a picture and put it on Facebook. Alright? There's no way to count your non-vote if you just stay at home.
That's right.
Do it anyway. Make your vote count. Just make it for no one. Because there's no politician right now that represents our interests as the people.
Do you belong to a party? Is there somebody that we could vote for?
Like I said before, as long as it takes millions of dollars to be a politician, politicians can only represent the interests of millionaires and not the interests of the people.
What about on the local level?
For any soldier that feels like there's no hope right now because they're in garrison and they've been scarred, the number to call is 1-800-273-8255. Again, 1-800-273-8255. And know that besides that number, besides those people that will be on the other side of your telephone, there are people here in the streets in every city across the world that support you.
Occupy
is a worldwide movement.
Occupy can support you. If you're out there thinking that you are nuts, you know, that you're alone and you're wondering how you can ever make it through, please come talk to us. Come talk to us. We're out there.
Immediately after this speech, Micah was escorted off of Freedom Plaza by a security detail of Occupy protesters and veterans. The following day, he spoke at an anti-war protest in New York City. On the evening of the 7th of October, he attempted to turn himself in at Fort Hamilton, but was told to come back the following day because it was night.
Called up on him, and he's not technically classified as a deserter yet. Mm-hmm. Or, So he's going to be granted what they call, it's a Form 460,
okay,
which is a promise to return in the morning, which he said he would do.
Okay.
So he's going to go with you folks. We just got to bring him down.
Should we follow you?
Yeah, you can follow me, but remain outside the building, okay?
Okay, sure.
Boyfriend, he'll be released.
On the 8th of October, he tried to surrender again at Fort Hamilton and was turned away by MPs at the gate. For the second day in a row, saying that because it was Columbus Day, better known as Indigenous Solidarity Day, all the detectives had taken the day off. Lawyers told him later that this refusal to accept his surrender restarts the clock on his AWOL status at day one. As of the 9th of October, Micah Turner, disgusted with the refusal of the military to accept his surrender, has gone on the road and underground so they cannot turn around and arrest him at a time of their choosing. Here is U.S. Army defector Micah Turner's Titans Rising rap piece from a CD that he distributed on Freedom Plaza on the day that he publicly announced his defection from the U.S. military to protest the wars in Afghanistan and elsewhere.
This This is the beginning, it's the Titan's rise. May justice find those eluding reprise. May my sight see not just the no but the why. May my promise to you be Zeus's demise. Best rapper alive, were you even surprised? I admit, I doubted, then I realized a rapper's just a poet through open eyes. And that's MT without disguise. Best rapper alive, I had to say it twice. This is the truth, not just a device. Because bullets win battles, but words win wars. Did you forget that I've got much more? I'm the new Dane's flag, like the government's dad. A propaganda master with a brand new tag. The people must speak, remove the gag. I'll fill you in, it's not all bad.
Controlling you like a bunch of sheep. Taking in your thoughts while you sleep. An information overload you to dream of our commercial on the TV screen. The newest thing, the latest ring. The good news is you too can't sing. I will not bow down, I will not conform. I will not accept the so-called norm.
My will is my soul, and it can't be sold. I'm holding all the cards, and I will not fold. Will of a champion and a heart too bold. Yes, life's too short, no I won't die old. Undercover hippie, peace sign flying high. Now I'm marching with my people, how will they reply? Cause they really do own me, that's no lie. But keeping quiet is how evil thrives. Unique from my fingertip to my face. And that is the truth for every case. It's not just to say we each have a sway. It's a rhythm that rocks us every day. Innovation, that's the fruit of the soul. It's a force like fire, consuming the bold. Like a message decrypted was written in code. And the meaning was lost along the road. This slave got a lot of nerve, you really talking back? Well, I have the courage that others lack. I will not back down and I won't obey. I won't be called your slave.
Of October, Occupy DC wrapped up a week of action against corporate-controlled government with an attempt to raid the IMF and World Bank's InfoShop bookstore for the second time in 2 days. This was followed by a successful entry to the Department of Commerce, following up storming the building with a protest inside.
We went on a march. We were kind of going by the IMF World Bank, and decided that we were going to try to get into their propaganda bookstore. We got up there. We almost got inside. They got riled up and got their mace out, almost maced us, like tipped over their they had a little propaganda books outside, knocked them over, and, you know, talked about the horrors of the IMF and World Bank on economic imperialism around the world. Then from there, we went on, and we somehow managed to get ourselves inside the Department of Interior.
Past the security checkpoints?
Not past the security checkpoints, but just inside the building, which is pretty cool. And
what was the reaction of that?
They almost shit a brick.
But they did. You may recall that it was about a year and a half ago that PowerShift got in there with several hundred people.
Yeah, that's awesome. Brian was doing his normal mic checks, and he was talking about, you know, how they're allowing for the destruction of indigenous land and the destruction of our waters and soil. So then the guy came in with his little like shotgun bag with the hand ties and like almost like said, you know, if you don't get out now, I'm going to arrest y'all kind of thing. And so we ended up leaving. And
not bad. Sounds like you all kicked some tail today.
Yeah, it turned out pretty good.
Later that night, Occupy DC and the Anarchist Alliance DC Network staged a march against all political parties behind a banner portraying the ballot box with a toilet tank. The message was that nobody keeps their campaign promises, nobody runs for office without selling themselves to corporations like Goldman Sachs, so they were advising people to vote for nobody in 2012, since nobody gets the option of voting against Goldman Sachs. That Occupy DC Friday night march culminated in a blockade of the shopping district in Chinatown at 7th and H.
Shutting down H and 7th in the middle of the shopping district.
The sit-down blockade moved on after about 15 minutes with no arrests. Interestingly, defector from the U.S. Army, Micah Turner, who publicly announced he was defecting from the U.S. Armed Forces at high noon the following day at Freedom Plaza, had essentially the same message in one of the videos on a video CD he distributed at Freedom Plaza, asking people not to vote on the grounds that both Obama and Romney are both for the war.
Hey, since no third-party candidate can get enough funding or time to win against two main party candidates, I vote this year for a vote of no confidence, because it's obvious to me that neither candidate is worthy of my vote. I shall not vote. Please join me this fall in a vote of no confidence and show the system how badly they failed you, the people.
On September 24th, 2012, eight people climbed into 80-foot trees to block construction of the Keystone XL pipeline, which will carry poisonous tar sands from Alberta, Canada, to the Gulf of Mexico. The tar sands blockade is a coalition of local landowners and environmental justice organizers using nonviolent direct action to physically stop the construction of the Keystone XL pipeline. Clearing crews have endangered lives by destroying land dangerously close to safety lines, but the occupation is holding and the tree village is still standing.
From North Texas, and I'm here because the extraction of tar sands is destroying our planet, and I don't want to spend the rest of my life having to clean up the mess that previous generations decided to put in place for us. The extraction of this type of fuel is much worse than any other type that we've seen. The only method that we can find now to actually do anything about it is nonviolent direct action.
Spray and tasers in a failed attempt to end the blockade by torturing protesters locked to heavy equipment, preventing its use. TransCanada employees have repeatedly attempted to drop felled trees directly on activists blocking pipeline construction. This situation has gotten so extreme that activist Daryl Hannah was arrested on the 4th of October for trespassing on Fairchild Farms, which is her own family farm, along with her grandmother.
Get off my land, period. And I don't want tar sands anywhere in the United States. I am mad. This land is my land. And it's been our land since 83. Our home is on it. They're going to destroy the woods and also they could destroy the springs. It's just devastating, but it also is not very good to have that tar sands anywhere in the United States. This is not just about my land. It's about all of our country. It needs to be stopped.
That's right. TransCanada is using eminent domain to dispossess landowners who won't sell out their lands for the Keystone XL tar sands pipeline in Texas, where eminent domain was never very popular. After Daryl Hannah was forcibly removed, TransCanada destroyed trees on her farm, preparing to turn yet another family farm into an industrial wasteland. Also on the 4th of October, local police went so far as to move a bucket containing rolls of toilet paper when tree sitters responded yes when asked if they intended to haul the toilet paper up to their platform. The tree sits are under siege, but as of the 8th of October are still holding out. One person may run out of endurance and be arrested upon descent after stopping clear-cutting for days, only to be replaced by another tree sitter. On the 7th of October, protesters had the nerve to retroactively charge Shannon, one of the blockaders tortured with pepper spray and a taser, with a felony for using a lockbox to lock her own arms to another protester. It took 58 hours to get her out of a Texas jail. Bond was set at $7,500.
A woman named Maggie had bail set at $11,000 for nothing more than sitting atop a 40-foot pole to blockade construction. And also on the 7th of October, a video was posted to YouTube in which a cop on a ladder to a tree sit refused to identify himself, backing off when his ladder could not reach the tree sit.
So y'all rotating out, or y'all staying up here the whole time?
Well, I think you're pretty sure we're not rotating out.
Well, I don't know. This is my question.
Yeah. Well, there's a nice little, you know, you all surrounding us pretty good.
We got a job to do.
But it has his sheriff on it.
Why are y'all so worried about me coming up here and talking to you?
Well, I don't know.
Huh?
I mean, I'm just talking. We're all just talking.
Right.
The folks who are here would prefer you didn't come up, though.
What?
They'd prefer you didn't come up.
Meanwhile, TransCanada has been attempting to bypass the blockade by clear-cutting trees in places they have no permits or architectural drawings, presumably seeking to build a road around the blockade. Do they propose to build a pipeline with a permanent U-bend in it if the blockade holds out long enough? People being arrested on their own farms for trespassing to make way for a tar sands pipeline? Put that in your gas tank and smoke it, SUV fans!
Last week, a group of local Texas environmental activists and their supporters from around the country began a nonviolent direct action protest to stop construction of the 435-mile southern leg of the Keystone XL pipeline, which is scheduled to be built between Cushing, Oklahoma, and Port Arthur, Texas. The pipeline is being built to bring tar sands oil from Alberta, Canada, to refineries on the Gulf Coast. Some protesters have been arrested, while others are maintaining a tree sit on the property where construction has begun. The Keystone Pipeline is organized into a four-phase project. The first two phases were completed a few years ago. The company constructing the pipeline, TransCanada, hoped to build Phase 3, the portion from Texas to Oklahoma, and then move on to build Phase 4, the pipeline that will extend into Canada. The Obama administration delayed approval of Phase 4, pending further environmental review. That was in response to one of the largest environment-themed protest campaigns in many years that included the arrest of more than 1,200 persons in a series of nonviolent civil disobedience actions in front of the White House just over a year ago. That protest was followed by a November action where some 10,000 activists surrounded the White House in order to persuade Obama to put a hold on the project. Between the Lines, Melinda Tuhus spoke with Ron Seifert, a spokesperson with the Tar Sands Blockade Coalition, who talks about support for and opposition to the pipeline project in Texas and the latest news on the protest actions there.
One of the primary concerns we face from East Texans and, well, Texans in general, is how this pipeline will affect their limited water supply. We all know Texas is a drought-stricken region, although East Texas tends to be a little greener and have a little bit more water than most of the state. It's not the typical desert western environment that we're used to seeing in the cowboy movies. Nonetheless, this pipeline will cross all the major water sources for the big metro areas in Texas. People don't necessarily know that this product, tar sands, is not crude oil. It's a different substance. It's a synthetic slurry. Tar sands is solid in its natural state, so it has to be boiled and diluted with chemicals, gas condensates, and all sorts of nasty, carcinogenic, toxic chemicals. And additionally, it's pumped at very high pressure, at over roughly 1,200 psi, 50% higher pressure than a conventional pipeline. So you have this melted, liquefied sandpaper mixed with toxic chemicals that's being blasted at high pressures through a steel pipe. It's a recipe for disaster. So clean water, and not to mention the arable soil in East Texas, are certainly parts of our commons and our environment that Texans hold near and dear, not only because of what it means to them as farmers and ranchers and landowners in the area, but what it means for their collective communities and their future overall.
Ron Seifert, in terms of jobs, you know, in terms of energy security, importing, where this would be importing energy from Canada rather than from the Middle East, has the project generated much support among the local population? I guess what I'm asking is, are the protesters out of the mainstream, or are locals behind it as well?
Well, there's an interesting conflict of traditionally conservative values that exist around this pipeline battle. Yes, it is the case that in Texas and Oklahoma, there's a lot of support from the ground up for the oil and gas industry and this value of unfettered energy expansion. But there's this also strong traditional conservative value of land rights and property ownership. And now these values are at conflict because of the pipeline. So what have traditionally been strongly protected, constitutionally protected, in fact, land rights are being trampled in the interest of energy expansion. So when it comes down to it, when local community folks, small town, everyday people that traditionally do support oil and gas have to choose between their own homes and their own ranches and the oil and gas industry, especially at the multinational level, that's not bringing any local support to their economy. You find a lot of folks think this idea of using eminent domain to bolster and increase private gains for private corporations is unacceptable. So from a land rights point of view, you have a lot of folks turning away from this project and supporting eminent domain reform, taking a stand against the idea that a foreign corporation can seize American property for its own private gain and that the government is going to be complicit in that transaction. It's really unconscionable, and it's offensive to a lot of folks around here. So we do have this kind of unique alliance where you have environmentalists and climate activists coming at this from one angle, and conservatives, some folks that are with more affiliate with the Tea Party politics, feeling that the idea that big government or big corporate multinational industry having these powers, having these tools of eminent domain is unacceptable, that it's a freedom that we're entitled as Americans, the right to our properties, and that they should not be imperiled with such nonchalance.
Can you just please summarize what's been happening with the protest on the ground?
So the tar sands blockade is a rolling, nonviolent civil disobedience campaign. And on multiple occasions, individual blockaders have put themselves in the way of construction to literally stop the Keystone XL pipeline line from being built. That's been met with different levels of police response from... In one occasion, the police simply doing nothing and washing their hands of it and walking away and leaving the blockaders to hold the construction site. To the worst case, police brutalizing blockaders, choking them, putting them in stress positions, tasing them, pepper spraying them, virtually torturing them. What's going on now and has been going on for the last week is our aerial tree blockade. It's a tree village and a timber wall that have been constructed spanning over 500 feet of the proposed pipeline route, tying in more than a dozen old growth trees. Nine different blockaders are sitting in trees or along a catwalk of this timber wall, freestanding wall of wood that was constructed in the middle of the forest. And those folks have dug in. They have ample food and supplies for weeks, and they're willing to do whatever they can to stay as long as it takes to stop the pipeline and raise enough awareness to encourage folks not only to come and join them in Texas, but to send the message that resistance is possible.
That was Ron Seifert, a spokesperson with the group Tar Sands Blockade in Texas. Find more information on the campaign to stop the Keystone XL pipeline by visiting our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.